This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9 is celebrating World Environment Day, brought to you by Inda Water Consortium.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's World Environment Day today, and we're exploring the theme of planet over profit here on BFM. So our daily lives are undoubtedly contributing to climate change, but does our personal consumption habits really matter in the climate emergency? You know, what difference can we make if most of the people and institutions with the most wealth and power continue to shirk their responsibilities? So joining me today to take the conversation beyond individual responsibility and to discuss the need for systemic change and corporate culpability in the fight against climate change is Gurmit Singh, the current chairman of the Centre for Environment, Technology and Development Malaysia, or SETDEM. And Gurmit was also the founder and executive director of SETDEM. Welcome, Gurmit. Thank you so much for joining us. So just to get to know you a bit better for those who don't, you are no stranger to the environmental cause. You spent over 4 decades as an ecological activist. You know, you've been advocating for practical solutions to halt ecological degradation. So, you know, scientists and environmentalists such as yourself, you've warned for decades about the risk to humanity and Earth posed by, you know, all this unfettered burning of fossil fuels. But, you know, arguably last year, 2019, was the year that the world awoke to the climate crisis. You know, the crisis kind of entered the mainstream. What do you think changed last year and brought this about?
I don't really know, because the climate crisis has been around for a long time. But I don't know what made the world wake up. It may be something, maybe Greta, perhaps actions of Greta or something. But the crisis has been around with us for 20, 30 years already.
That's right. And you've been speaking about how environmental issues, they're interconnected with other forms of iniquity. And, you know, it deserves everyone's attention. For those of us who are unfamiliar with the work that you do, can you share what SETDEM has been advocating for?
Well, SETDEM has been trying to basically, from day one, since its formation in 1985, basically been trying to promote the concept of sustainable development. And within that rubric, try to address all sorts of environmental problems and link them to the issue of sustainable development. And of course, currently we are now trying to address the issues of sustainability itself. So we have done a range of projects, beginning from the first organic farm in 1986 to the making of our office cool and comfortable without passive cooling and no use of air conditioning. A whole range of projects where we basically try to demonstrate solutions to practical problems. But at the same time, we have also been campaigning, and campaigning internationally as well. And of course, climate change has been one of the closest issues to my heart. And related to climate change is this whole question of energy and the whole question of transport.
And that's something else that you've been very vocal about. I know, for example, you don't own a car. You take either public transportation or you cycle around or walk or whatever it is. I mean, and that is something that you've been trying to get locals to cotton on to as well, and to take on as well. But how has that been? You know, that effort to promote these sorts of lifestyle changes.
Yeah, not really that well, that good. Despite my continuing since 1978. Since I sold my car to rely on public transport, etc., I don't see that many people willing to move over to private transport. Now, perhaps some are beginning, but that's only after the transport became air-conditioned and a bit more comfortable. There are people who are still using the excuse of our temperatures. It's too hot for us to cycle. So all sorts of excuses, but I'm quite happy to note that there are more and more young people who are actually taking cycling quite seriously. But what I mean, it hasn't really featured in our government's efforts, and public transport is still not a priority area, and yet public transport is one of the best ways of reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
That's right, yeah. And do you think that individuals, for example, they place far too much hope on, you know, environmental groups and funders to act, you know, to shape public opinion as a way to drive change?
Well, that's the trouble. You know, it reminds me of the past, where somebody had a problem staying in Bukit Gasing, and instead of raising up the problem of the denuding of the Bukit Gasing, rang me and expect me to take up the problem with the MPP president. You know?
Yeah.
And that attitude is still not really stopped. You know,
You
do the dirty work for me.
I know you've spoken about, you know, people don't really get involved unless it's happening in their backyard.
Yeah.
You know, that's the issue.
Yeah, because what I mean, if you are not willing to do anything about it and expect people to do it, how long can people keep on doing on? And anyway, why should they be doing that when it is within your responsibility to do? So I think the problem is this basic apathetic problem, or let others do the dirty work. I think each one has to be really involved. You know, the superficiality, as you yourself said, you know, using a little bit less plastic and all that, are just gimmicks only. You really have to change your lifestyle.
And, you know, that is something that I wanted to talk about. You know, climate change, that is a planetary scale threat, you know, and as such requires a planetary scale reform, you know, reforms that really can only be implemented by the world's governments. Do you think that, you know, asking individuals to bear the burden of global warming, that sort of shifts the responsibilities from those who are meant to protect those, you know, who are meant to be protected? So what I'm trying to say is, do we need to hold governments to their responsibilities first and foremost?
Yeah, I think we definitely must hold them, but at the same time, we ourselves should be willing to do things ourselves. It's just like pointing fingers at other people and three fingers are pointing back to you. And so in that sense, I feel individuals also must do something, but I fully agree that much of the big thing can only be done by corporations and government. Like, for example, stop coal usage for electricity generation. You know, we Malaysia have been going to coal-fired power station. Now, the previous minister in charge of climate change was talking about doing this and that, but he never uttered a word about stopping giving up coal.
Yeah, and I think we all know, you know, recent reports have found that it's, you know, just a few companies that are responsible for 71% of global emissions since 1988. And incredibly, you know, a lot of these are mostly coal and oil producing companies. So, you know, if the fossil fuel industry and these high polluting countries are not forced to change, you know, we're probably going to be on course to increase the global average temperatures by 4% by the end of the century. So how can we make them responsible for, you know, for these sorts of actions?
I think one of the ways to be those people who fund them, they should stop funding them. The bank should stop giving loans to people who, even World Bank and others, are still happily giving loans for fossil fuel stuff. If they put a stop to it, say, no more fossil fuel funding, like, for example, the Norwegian fund has decided to pull out of all fossil fuel stuff and all this sort of thing, that has a bigger impact. And I think we have to work on our banks as well. We just cannot use the people at the end who are using that money to produce the coal, but also we must look at the people who are financing them.
Yeah, but, you know, what must be done by rich countries, for example, and these powerful industries to support, you know, and empower poorer countries, for example, to mitigate and adapt to climate change?
I think it's a responsibility for all countries, whether big or small. But, of course, those who are big, you know, this is a typical example of the rich not wanting to give up their choice or the way of life and asking the poor instead to make the sacrifices. This has been the hypocrisy in all the climate negotiations that I've been observing. And I've stopped following the negotiation now because I think they're totally a waste of time. Those people, negotiators, have produced a lot of emissions themselves and they hardly have reduced anything.
Yeah, but going back to individual behavior, for example, shifting behaviors, that can be really difficult. And, you know, it can go beyond individual choice to sort of rethinking whole systems. What do you think we can do to reassess, you know, longstanding, you know, social, personal, economic or political norms and move towards a better sort of plan to, you know, combat the climate emergency?
I think this COVID crisis gives us an opportunity because a lot of things are going to be restructured. The way we do things, the way we invest, the sort of jobs we are creating, all this will have to be redone. Mm-hmm. And I think this gives us a good opportunity to do it right. to stop funding all those things to ourselves, you know, since we can stop all this Hari Raya visiting, this sticking to each other, hugging each other and all those sort of things, because of the danger of the death, we also should use this opportunity to move along the new track. In other words, move along the green path.
And, you know, what about laws, for example? I know previously you've called on Putrajaya, for example, to reform environmental laws, but you've also said that we are full of regulations. In fact, perhaps we are even over-regulated. But what can we do to make sure that there are no loopholes for discretionary powers, for example?
I think basically we have to keep putting pressure on the government to enforce the laws consistently and uniformly. No point having new laws, amend this, amend that personality, gives you a nice feeling. But on the ground, it makes no difference. You know, look at the Sungai Kim case. Why did it occur in the first place? Because the law was not being observed. People just threw the rubbish around and got away with it. And so the question we never really asked was, what were the DOE people doing all this while? So I think these are the basic things. We have to hold the government accountable, and we must make sure that the civil servants are accountable and they do their jobs. We don't, you know, as I said, we don't want to have more laws. We want to make sure the existing laws are better enforced.
Exactly. You know, we need to make clear that there are some standards and there should be no exemptions. Do you think one of the ways is to reform legislation to sort of remove discretionary powers, for example?
Yeah, of course. That is one of the first things. There should be no discretionary powers. There should be no favoritism. And there should be either on racial or whatever grounds. And the law must be seen to be uniform. And the penalties must be serve the purpose of being a deterrent. For example, even in the existing laws, there is a provision for people to be sent to prison. Why don't they send the managing director to 1 week in prison? So I think the laws are there. Only thing, that, first thing, the people are not being caught. Secondly, when they're caught, the penalties are just a slap on the hand and the bigger power of the law is not being used.
That's right. I guess, you know, this is something you've been advocating for the last, you know, 4 decades of your life. Are you seeing any positive changes at all in all this time?
Well, I think there are some incremental changes. There is at least among the Malaysian public a little bit more talk about environment. They don't laugh at environment and don't run away from environmental issues. But I still don't see the fundamental changes that are necessary and that are urgent, you know? People, you know, tend to think nowadays forests become the in thing or rivers become the in thing, and they think that is the only problem. But they forget, for example, that the problems related to flooding are not due to just cutting of forests alone, but the whole land management. You allow soil to be eroded to get into the rivers, and you don't dredge them up, rivers up. So I think what we need to do is to keep on, even among the NGOs, we have to keep on saying we must look at the whole overall picture. We must look at holistic solutions and we must advocate the holistic solutions.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we must also hold governments and industries accountable.
They must always, state governments, federal governments, look and see what's happening in Pera and Kedah now. Back again to logging.
That's right. It's that putting of profit before the planet, and it's very short-term thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've mentioned before, you have a memoir out, of course, and you mentioned that overcoming the public's apathy, that was a tough struggle for you. Do you still find that a struggle in the work that you do?
I still think it is. It is. There is not really that over-enthusiasm. There is some interest once in a while. People do things. There are more younger people coming up forward, especially on climate change. There have been a couple of demonstrations, but we need more of them. We need more people, more of the younger people to really say climate is as much my concern as anybody else's. And the climate and the environment is our future.
Yeah.
Because I really would like to see the youth embrace the environment and climate change issues, really.
Yeah, I mean, we are seeing a lot of them. You know, I think they're adapting to it a bit better than perhaps, not you, of course, but to some of the older generation, you know, who still kind of, you know, tell them to go back to school, tell them to stop striking, mm-hmm. you know, to tell them that, you know, industry is important. And that's something that also really, really needs to change.
Yeah. But the problem with the youth sometimes is their interest is not persevering. They are short-term interest. Sometimes then they lose interest and they switch over to something else. So I think to tackle the environmental problem, you really need to persevere. And you need to work at it all the time.
And, you know, now that the whole world is facing the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, do you think that people are going to start getting fatigue, you know, because there's just apocalypse fatigue, you know, the face of there's all these overwhelming messages, you know, everything is just going wrong. How can we overcome this fatigue and, you know, stay the course as such?
Well, I think to say that at the end of it, we still are going to be alive and we still have work to take care of. And the climate change and environmental problems are there. Mm-hmm. Even after we get out of the COVID-19 situation.
Yeah. And on a personal level, you know, has the pandemic affected the work ZDM has been doing?
Well, it certainly has affected. We have been running into a financial problem even before the COVID began. And now we are still struggling how to raise enough money to keep ourselves going. Mm-hmm. That is one of them, and we have some staff problems. We have to replace staff. So we are still looking for a general manager. I've just put an advertisement on our website. So far, nobody has responded.
Oh, dear.
Because we can't play much.
Yeah, it's a very unfortunate thing about, you know, all the environmental organizations. But you know, if anyone would like to get in touch, if they're interested to help, I know that Hari Organic has to be put on hold now, of course, because of the CMCO.
Yeah.
But, you know, when things start getting back to normal, the new normal as it is, will Hari Organic, you know, continue and things
that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You visit our website, we have a calendar there. Mm-hmm. Some things we have to call off, some things are suspended.
Okay.
There's a fundraising dinner which we wanted to hold this year to raise money. We have now had to postpone it to next year.
Okay. All right. But you know, if anyone's interested to get in touch and to support you, whether financially or, you know, maybe to become your general manager, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best thing to write to me, gs@saddam.org.my.
Okay. All right. And is there any last message you'd like to leave us all with this World Environment Day?
Oh, I think we have to keep at it. We have to keep on. Don't give up. And we must persevere.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Gurmit Singh. He is the chairman of the Centre for Environment, Technology and Development Malaysia, or CETDEM. And we were talking about how there is a need to put planet before profit. If you'd like to get in touch, again, you can head to CETDEM's Facebook page. That's facebook.com/setdem.org.my. Or you can just visit their website at CETDEM. That's CETDEM.org.my. And you can also get a copy of Gurmit's book, Memoirs of a Malaysian Eco-Activist, over at arecabooks.com. That's arecabooks.com. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This World Environment Day special was brought to you by Indah Water Consortium, New Life for Water.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.